this fact would have been settled. But you build it up to such a feverish pitch, and the television and the newspapers are responsible for it. Now, they didn't write any stories about the trade union. All they wanted to write about was some guy get put in jail because of, he got up and was preaching civil rights. 40 preachers standing on the line now, howling about people's civil rights. I was there. They didn't put me in jail, they put our people in jail. They put 44 of them in jail. And they did it for violating the law. If they hadn't prayed, then we'd have got a permit. If they'd have waited until I got the permit, we wouldn't have got them in jail. But you see, there's two things that don't mix. When you have a trade union fight, you have a trade union fight. And there's no better than I am for civil rights. But there's a time and place for it. And when they injected civil rights in that area, you couldn't make it stand up. And we looked like jackasses when we went in to debate any of the type of issues. Because of the fact you couldn't debate that there was any civil rights discrimination. But Delano, when you go look at the city of Delano in the community, what do you find on the city council? You find Mexican people, which is domineering in the community, on the city council, don't you? Your police force, who do you find on it? See? There's where we made the mistake. In my opinion, a lot of people don't agree with me. But that's what I say was wrong.
Yeah, you know, certainly.
Because when we started to blast them on civil rights, they didn't discriminate. They hired any goddamn thing to come along.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, growers if anything, discriminated in reverse. They prefer to go to non-white countries for the more.
They actually, if there was any discrimination, Nate was discriminating against the Anglo. Because he was so far in the minority down there in Delano that it isn't even funny. The people that actually do the work in the Delano area, let's be frank, are the Filipino, the Mexican, and the Negro. The Arabians and the Puerto Ricans. Where you find one Anglo, you find 50 of the others. But you couldn't say it was he was discriminating because they didn't turn him down. They never turned him down. We've had it in mixed camps. See, I was down there. When I first went down there, they were getting 90 cents an hour. We went up to a dollar and a dollar ten. And we got a dollar 20 and a dollar ten for our grade. I worked that area for 3 long years. Many a night I had meetings in Delano when I only had 5 people. 5 people. 1962 was nothing. The whole meeting and only had 5 people. Caesarship, as we said. What the hell was he doing? How many members has he got? How many dues-paying members has he got? He didn't have enough to support his own picket line. For Christ's sake, he had to do the picketing on other people. Sure, on Saturdays and Sundays, he had the kids come down from the college and raise a lot of hell down there. But that's not a trade union. You see, the people is good. When you're in the trade union strike, you've got to have the working man projecting yourself. But when you go into professional pickets, you lose the public sentiment.
Do you think that Anglo farm workers are going to start getting out of agriculture? Do you think that because maybe people are beginning to look at the farm worker as somebody Mexican-American?
No. Look, wherever you find the money, you find the Anglo. You got a million branches out there. Where you find them paying a dollar and a half or an hour, $1.55, or a dollar and a half a box of asparagus, and you find plenty of Anglos working. You go out in the cherries where they're paying $1.10, $1.25 a bucket, and you got all 90% Anglos, haven't you? See? As this thing, there's lots of people. People tell you that the Anglo won't work there. Now, that isn't so. But the Anglo is a different breed of person. He knows a little more, not all of them. But the average person, living standard, is just a little bit different. Now, you take a person who comes from a foreign country, the average, but not all. Anything that he gets in America is an improvement for what he left, is that right? But you take the American people that's born and raised here, and he's used to a little better. So when you bring in a boy from Mexico, and I know lots of them, any goddamn thing that you give them over here, is better than what they had at home. I don't care what you mean, it's better than what they had at home. Well, the minute that you start to get this money to where these farm workers are making $2 an hour, and that's not far away, because I wouldn't be afraid to sign a contract tomorrow with compulsory arbitration with compulsory unionism. Because there's an arbitrator in the United States today that you couldn't take a case before and get $2 an hour. If he didn't, he doesn't believe in your democracy system, because you've got to make better than $2 an hour to stay out of the poverty sector. And I say to you, if it wasn't true, they say that the people won't do this work, the American people. Now, you would take in on each big city you want, all who cleans the sewers out, take the city of Stockton. I'll show you guys, it's been 25 years on sewer work here. Why did they do it? Because there was a living wage. Because there was a little retirement, full social security, right? And a little welfare to take care of the family in their contracts. Just like Dave, he's a cement mason. 75% of his time he's on his knees, pounding that goddamn cement out of it. The sun hot beating him on his ass. Toughest work there is. But why do they do it? They get $4.95 an hour. I'm a plasterer by trade. That's no soft job. Why was I a plaster? Shit, I was getting $1.50 an hour and up to $16 a day in 1922. We get 5 cents an hour, plus a $200 a month pension when we become 60 years old. We got a health and welfare. It takes care of our teeth and our glasses and all of our health. The 120 days in the hospital. You don't have any trouble getting people. Shit, you go out here and you pay these people a living wage, and you'll find more goddamn Anglos working out there than Carter has skills. But what do you have? You go out here to the field. Here, I'm on unemployment insurance. And I'm only getting, say, $35 a week. But if I leave this unemployment and go out and go to work in the field, when I come back, I can't draw my unemployment because I've lost my identity and my craft, haven't I? That's why you have these people cheating. You go out through the jury out here, and you find operating engineers, carpenters, laborers, and everybody else working on somebody else's social security number. Maybe not drawing their unemployment, but working on a different security, social security number. Taking cherries out there, making themselves 25, 30 bucks a day. It's hell, any guy who knows how to pick cherries would go out there and shit, he could pick up $20 a day. There's any cherries there at all. They're paying $1.25 this year. So the story is, you see, there's one theory you have to live on in America. There never was a shortage of workers. There's always a shortage of pay. Now you take the average Mexican boy. There's over 600,000 green cards that's been issued since they first inaugurated the program. And you will find lots of them working in various departments out here. And I'm working for $1.30, $1.25, $1.50 an hour. Why are they there? Because number one, they have full social security. They have unemployed insurance company. They have a minimum wage and they have a right to live in federal courthouse. But they wouldn't be there 24 hours because they love the fields. People out here, they're working tile jobs. There's seven of our members out there. And they work in there. But they keep their dues up here. Every day off and the weekends, they're working in the field. And the reason they're in that yard out there is because of that security that they have. See? And when the farmer, see, it's like the farmer, when the farmer starts to, most people that take after the farmer are wrong in their approach. And you hear people cussing this grower and that grower. And you, this son of a bitch and that son of a bitch. That's not right. I have no fight with the growers unless he violates the law. In America, we live on the merits of what the man creates. So he's either a son of a bitch or he's a law-abiding citizen or he isn't. Is that right? Now, he can be one of the funniest people in the world, but as long as he's a law-abiding citizen and he isn't creating crime and raising hell, he's respected as a citizen, isn't he? Now, here's a bunch of growers out here that are not violating the law. Our whole trouble, and not all of our trouble with the farmland, lies with the United States Senate. 51% of them are wrong. The Congress, 51% of them are wrong. Sacramento, your state senators, They're the one that's creating the chaos because of the fact every piece of legislation they endorse, they build and escape tax freedom. You show me one guy that will pay his goddamn income tax voluntarily, and I'll show you hundreds in jail that won't pay it right now with the law. Is that right? So when you attack the grower out here, that's not the way to get the issue apart, because 9 out of 10 times when you attack the grower, you're attacking the man in his community that's looked up to because of his morals. 9 out of 10 times. He's a churchgoer. He isn't arrested for this or that. But you attack the guy, as he's no good. That's wrong.
You've been able to do a lot of work with contractors and to a certain extent change their attitudes.
Sure. I've got 138 of them signed up.
Could you tell us how you went about that?
Well, the way I went about it was to approach the people, not as sons of bitches, but as a very vital, important part of the farm industry. They're just as important to the farm industry as the sheet metal contractor is to the general contractor, the electrical contractor is, the plastering contractor, the cement contractor, the iron contractor, anybody to the general contractor who in turn builds your buildings. Now, you, regardless of what you say about the contractors, there are a lot of phonies in it. There's all types of phonies, because after all, if they weren't phonies, we wouldn't have pencils with the rubbers on the end of them, wouldn't we? There's nobody perfect, and that's why they put them on there. So my approach to these people were how essential you are. There isn't association in this valley, Contractors Association of Building Industry, that I didn't help build. And I built them for a purpose, and that's what I'm trying to do with the contractors, is to put them in a position that they're just as strong as we are. So when we sit across this table, we're dealing with a strong group of people. And when we get down and beat out an agreement, we got something. Now, why do you say, why did you want to do that? Because the contractor is just a slave for the grower. Every contractor, I don't know of one that ever has an agreement with a grower out there. You fire him in the morning. He's been a tool. And the boys that work under my contract will tell you. The grower doesn't fool with it. You don't find any of my contractors out here that don't pay the $1.40. You never have any trouble with them. And he's grower never built you. Because he got backing from us. You know, he'll get his ass struck. A lot of these fellows came in here, and I've had as high as 25 and 30 subjects. And one of this whole program. They're scared to death. They have no place to go but to steal the money from the workers if they steal it. Because here tonight you say, well, I'll take this mini case. We'll just give you an example, beets. The government says you got $17 an acre for thinning and weeding beets, huh? That's credit to the grave under the Sugar Act if you were very familiar with it. So you can't lose. There's no chance for you losing that deal. So what does he do? He calls you up and he says, well, I'll give it to you. I want you to take them beets for $15, right? So you say yes. Before you get your crew together, some guy comes along and says, I'll take them for $13, huh? Now, under the law, that's not legal. But you see, under that law, they only recognize one employer. That's the grower. So now, you hire me, and you take me out in the field, and I can't make $1.25 an hour. The labor commissioner won't take you, because under the act, he can't, see. A lot of people don't understand these things. That's why I say people that are discussing the contractor don't understand the farm business. The contractor is a very essential tool. How many growers out here that you know can afford to own buses, have camps, and haul the people back and forth? Maybe some private growers out here that's in a position to have camps on his property, can have own four or five buses, and use them 60 days out of the year. How many do you know can do that? Huh?
I don't know of any.
All right. Now you take a Calpac operation, that's a different thing. They got 3,000 acres here, they got 6,000 here, they got 4,000 up there. Now that's a factory. But we are dealing with individual farmers. There's over 3,100 peach growers in Stanislaus County. 3,100 peach growers. Now, how many out of that 3,100 peach growers can afford to tie his money up into two or three buses and they camp on this place. See? Mm-hmm. So what we got to do, the trade union movement's got to do, they got to do the same thing with these farm labor contractors as they did with the GIPO contractors that we had in the building industry. See? I can remember the days, for Christ's sake, when a contractor, cement contractors especially, had 90% of their people working on the footage basis. And they were getting away with it. I remember well when in the plastering trade, when you would get so much a house to brown it, you didn't know what a hell of a minimum wage was. I never worked in a clothes shop in my life. We made it. We laid the book down and the guy didn't match it, we didn't go to work. But these people that's attacking it, in my opinion, is attacking the contractor, they're not in the right category. Because you're going to have to make that contractor a strong representative so that he can sit across that table and be strong like we are. And when we come out of there with a contract, he's in a position to go out to the drawer and say, this is what I want, this is what I'm going to pay, and if you don't give it to me, okay. And if he gets the scab, our job is to take him on, the same as we did in the building trades. But we have guys that sitting around talking that don't know a goddamn thing about the farmers. Cesar Chavez is one. We got more goddamn unlicensed contractors in Delano that call themselves fruit pushers, and you got no hold on. And wherever they move, the crew moves. Is that right? But they don't have a contractor. Every one of them is subject to be arrested. But they say that's okay. But if you can't go down and collect a quarter off of the crew pusher because he has nothing to begin with. We have case after case that come into this office. Workman's comp cases. When you was a crew pusher, you bought a crew in, you got your back hurt. And the employer says, hell, he's not my man. And when I came in, we goddamn quick straightened them up. Probably $1,700, $1,800 in back pay from the goddamn rancher because of the fact that he was acting as his poop pusher and the man got hurt and here the poor son of a bitch had run around with a bad back and nobody took care of him, he had no place to go. And that's been the pattern. See? We can show you a labor file in here and knock you out of that chair. I don't know how many $1,000s that we've taken in. On labor cases, and various things, disability cases where they've taken these workers to part. That was it. Until we are strong enough to build a contractor's organization that can stand on its 2 feet, we're weak as hell.
Al, you were director of COPE for the Western Region. Do you still hold that office?
No. 12 years. You see, if we would concentrate as union people, not as do-gooders, and get down to where this operation should be formed, it's just like you if you went in the doctor's office. He doesn't know what the hell's wrong with you until he asks you and he takes a few pictures, does he? You can go into the doctor's office and you take a look at you and he'll give you a shot. You might have a fucking appendix that's driving you crazy. He gives you a shot, he quiets you for a while, don't he? And you come back in and you still got it. You don't know until he gets down inside and sees what it is. Now you see what's been going in this country here. On top, we haven't come in here. No food. My lights, my water, my gas is turned off. I'm cooking in the yard. I pick up the phone and raise hell with the welfare and they fill the car up with some goddamn groceries and somebody pays their gas and lights and they're back in business again. See what I mean? They don't even realize what happened to them. 90% of them can't read and write. 90% of them can't vote. They don't know what the citizenship means to them. And there's no goddamn education going on. All we've been doing is easing the pain on top. And that's why I'm not popular. Because I say, piss on them. The place to get down here is at the bottom of this thing. Set them up as a trade union. Quit giving them. Make them earn it. Like myself, I served 6 years for my goddamn card. I worked alongside a guy who's getting 14, I was getting 2.5 a day and liked it. And I realized what it meant. But as long as you've got these people out here as we have them, how many people's ever concentrated on taking these Mexican people as green card to teach them how to become citizens, their rights. They kick them in the ass like they're dogs. And the only one that can fuck them around is their own people. Who can exploit them? Who can exploit a Mexican? You or I can. An Anglo can't exploit him. He's got to hire one of the natives to do it. Should I take you out here on the ranches and show you guys who are blowing $300 and $400 a month in a house to live in? And why are they there? Because they take their own brother and fuck them every day out in the fields.
Larry Italion ran for city council in Galena.
Got his ass beat off, didn't he?
Yeah.
Very popular. What, did he get 419 votes?
But, do you think that there'll be more campaigns like that by AWAR people? Or?
No, if I have anything to do with it. You're not ready to run a candidate for... How many of our people can vote?
I don't know.
So we got 10,000 on the list back there. With 2,500 of those people can vote, what do
you think that it's going to take a massive registration, voter registration campaign?
Well, I don't know. We registered in this office alone. In 62, we registered over 7,300 more than the Democrats and Republicans put together in 62. We done a job for Brown. 41,000 majority carried in 10 counties, and you check their record and see where the registered job was done. In the farm, and Tulare's a good example. Denver put in the Democrat county in 62, is that right? Check the record. Less than 2,000 votes, first time in history. But you you see, the whole goddamn thing in this program is you can't get people to listen that can do the job, and that's our people. It's got the money. You've got to spend some money. We haven't spent 10 cents a member yet organizing this goddamn outfit. We brag about 14 or 15 million people. Now, goddamn it, if you put a dollar a member in this son of a bitch and go out here, set you up some schools, meet this problem head on. Goddamn it, we could take and right in this community here, we could build ourselves a $4 million labor center that would make anything look sick and never miss it. They went into Mexico and spent $56 million, didn't they? And they built the houses so that people can buy them back and rent. You take a community like this and you drop $2 or $3 million here in the labor center, and you have classes and instructors to teach these people at night. You may only get four or five the first round, but when you get in there and start giving a little recognition, I know the Mexican people, and I know them well. You got to explain things well to them, and you can't push them and you can't bullshit them. Because they're a very timid race, and once they close the door on you, they don't come out. But we can, my own personal opinion, to me, it's asinine to bring these people into our country who are looking for a better way of life. And that's what we preach and preach, but we sure as hell don't practice like Bobby Kennedy said. We preach and we preach. But when are we going to put it into practice? He kicked the shit out of him the other night in the newspaper when he dumped that Marshall Plan idea to send the Latin Americans. Instead of sending the Marines, send them a little food and a little education, right? God damn it. And the same thing goes here. What's wrong with this? Why do they cuff the shit out of these poor Mexican workers? When I came here, them cocksuckers used to have the dogs on the street every morning kicking them around. Is that right? You get out of line, they set the fucking dogs on you. In America. You don't see it anymore, do you? You never see a dog on this goddamn street down here.
What do you think will... what will AWAP do during the... during Brown's campaign now? You go as hard for him as you did in...
Well, sure, I'm going as hard as I can. I knocked his brains out until he came out and introduced and recommended the wages, and I got off his back. I told him in his office the Monday after the Easter. I sat in his office. I was the only guy who showed up there. He sent me a wire. And I know they ignored it. I wrote that bastard a lot of letters and wires. He never ignored it, and he ignored me, and I beat his brains out down through this valley and every place I can hit his stomach. So I tear his guts out. I knew him when he was an ordinary lawyer for the painters. San Francisco, long before he was ever a district attorney. I know Pat inside and out, but just because that he doesn't do everything I want him to, I'm not a dog in the manger. I realize that the political situation the way it is, You see, the thing that makes me mad, you hear people cussing the hell out of Brown, but I don't hear anybody cussing the hell out of Senator Short here. I don't hear him cussing the hell out of the Monaghan here, the bastards that make the law. See, we were able to carry the goddamn unemployment insurance through that 63 session, through the House, and the 80 members, and we lost the Senate division in the Senate and a five-man committee by one vote. But I've never heard anybody come out and blast the shit out of those senators but me. They all jump on the Brown. What the hell? Brown has only got one vote, and that's a veto. That's all he's got. Well, sure, he's a governor, but at the same time, he has lots of programs that he has to put through. Isn't that right? He has to know when to compromise, and he has to know how to use compromise, doesn't he? Or he's a dead pigeon. So when they start telling me about him, I tell him the reason I'm on his ass is because of the fact that I wrote him some damn good letters. And I wired him for some help. He never answered me, and I knocked his fucking brains out. I told him so when his mother was sitting in there, when I told him. He said, I'm off your back. I said, I want to tell you something. Just give you a little tip. You're as dead as a fish on the bank right now. Because you can line up in any union hall you want of 10 people and see if you can get 6 of them to support the Brown. Don't give a damn what place you go to. He's in a hell of a fix. See, all this taxation, he ain't got sense enough to let the people know where the taxation went. When they talk about taxation in the state of California, I get a kick out of it. Where the hell did the taxes go? How many state tax issues did Brown carry through? If you check them out, you'll find out that they're all the bastards drifted back to a local spot, a community in a local county. But he hasn't got any kind of a brochure out that's explaining where these raising taxes went. Look at our welfare system. Got the first and the best in the United States, haven't we? You don't hear anything about it first on it. Look at your educational system, the money that you get, your hospitalization, your state hospital, your mental institutions. Christ, they're in the state of the United States system. It's anywhere as near us. Look at your highway system. And you sit down and figure out what this guy has done in 7 years, but he don't know how the hell to tell people. He goes out and he gets his foot in his mouth before he gets turned around. He's fucking around with a California university. Why don't I give him a ball bat a piece up and let him ruminate one another? Fuck, why, that's what I'd do. Cut him in two and say, here, boys, go to work on one another. Settle all this goddamn beef up. Shit, he makes my ass tired. Anyway, in this business, we got... Don't you think that we should be ashamed of ourselves? The clergyman, the labor movement, and the public in general, shouldn't we be ashamed of ourselves, what we have allowed to exist here by keeping these people in this second-class category? Those people don't even have a right, for Christ's sake, to live in a low-cost housing program. Did you know that? A farm worker can't go in and rent into it because he doesn't have a minimum wage. See? I think it's that we should be so ashamed of ourselves to allow this thing to exist. Like Bobby Kennedy told those bastards down there, he was at the hearing, did you hear him? He said to the guy, he said, you know, I want to ask you a question. He said, would you want your children to sleep and be raised in those cabins and those houses that we looked at? He said, no, you won't answer. He said, you wouldn't let your dog live in there. So Bobby told him. He says, I want to ask you a question. He said, aren't these people entitled to just the same type of an education as your child is? Oh, he'd give him hell. And he said, well, you go home at noontime. I want you to read the Constitution of the United States just once. Of all these phony pictures and stuff that you've been taking. See? Why, like he told me, and I know him very well. He said, it's a disgrace. You get this legislation, you get it. Because he wants it, and they can't stop him. Anything this kid wants in that goddamn Senate, he'll get. Don't worry. He'll be your next president, just as sure as you're sitting here. Whether you want him or not, he's going to be elected. I worked with him, and I worked with his brother very, very close. We called him the captain of the Boy Scouts in his campaign. And he's a shrewd, and he's sharp, And he's a well-educated guy. He can't deal it off the top of his head as fast as Jack did, but he's a well-read man. But I think, I tell the ministers and I tell everybody, like I'm telling you, I think we should be ashamed of ourselves. We should be ashamed of ourselves in California to treat 300,000 to 400,000 workers like we treat the farm workers. They feed you. And you don't even see that they have a decent toilet in the goddamn food, nor a decent glass of water, do you? If you read Faye Bennett's report, did you read it?
Yeah, I got a copy of it.
You read it. The only place, and she traveled over 700 miles, and the only place that she could find where they were paying the wages is where EWOC had to come. She made the report herself. She had to come clear from New York to put it over. So I say to you fellas that you're doing a hell of a job here. You've got an opportunity to write a hell of a story. And you don't have to, look, you don't have to build anything. All you got to do is to cite the facts.
We found that building, as a student, building something,
to
get involved.
You see, you fellas, you have the time and the energy. There's so much that can be done, the facts. Dave, could you give him the copy of the Voices? Hollering for people back in the early 30s, do you have one of those?
Yeah.
Do you have some of those pictures, where those stories where we won the strike? In the 30s, got the pay?
Coachella.
In Coachella? You have the Lodi story? You don't have that, do you?
May have one more left. Good.
That's the first one, the only first release I ever gave. Never got an answer, not a grower, nobody ever tried to answer.
Nobody challenged.
Nobody challenged. It was put in the most reactionary paper in California, the Lodi Sentinel.
Because the editor was on vacation. And the guy slipped it in while he was gone, and the day he got back, it hit the streets. And Dale Palazar, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Boy, he said he thought that guy was going to fire him right on the spot. He did.
But the thing,
he made that paper.
But the thing that he got, Dale got, he's got a hell of a good job. He moved to a better job in Palo Alto. And all the boss got up there was people calling up and agreeing with him.
But he was a grower sympathizer, see? He
was just, I say to you, fellas, he was brainwashed. He was brainwashed. I'd like to give those, you got the breakdown, did you ever get the breakdown on California packing and the Georgia?
Yeah, I've got one wonderful copy of that, of the compact in Georgia.
You got any out there?
I think I got some more.
You want some fresh one?
I don't know.
You show me a farmer in that with Calpac and I'll eat the son of a bitch. You show me a farmer on that goddamn list and I'll eat it. You see, those are the things that you and I, we have failed years ago. We have failed because we had a $3,000 educational program and they wouldn't give me the money. I had a station here in this town that would give me 15 minutes every day of the week and 30 minutes on Sunday, or I could use it any way I wanted to, for $500 a month. And God damn it, if I could have had that, with the amount of people that I could have gotten to at that time, kids in school and various people just dying to get into something. You see, you could have cut the tape, you could have brought it back, they wouldn't have lost any time, but you'd have had people speaking. And this time this covers from everything from, practically from the Tehachapi to the Oregon line, right into this battle. You'd have poured it on them, you'd have had them crazy. They'd have had to answer to me, but I couldn't give you the money. Just imagine getting 15 minutes a day and 30 minutes on Sunday. That's an hour and 20 minutes.
You had broke them back.
What? You could have had, how many students could you have gotten? Would have been tickled to death to come down, or would have been terrific to cut a tape for you.
Yes,
huh? Well, not only that, but look at the Spanish-speaking people, the Filipino, and their own town, and everything else you could have gotten. Well, I don't know if I've done you any good. If you want to know anything else, ask me. All I'll give you is an honest answer.
I think we can get some of that stuff from Dave.
Yeah, no, you still want the information on that Beastie Britain company?
Yeah, if possible.
Do you want to let that story out or not? They just want to write it up, how it started, and some of the abuses of the unfair practices and
stuff? Well, we got a lot of that documented, haven't we?
Pretty well.
That we could give it to them. It's a very simple story, but there's another case. They would sign up 125 people. They want union. And when the National Labor Relations Board get through with it, they allow us 54. And out of the 54, 47 of them vote for a union, and we haven't got a contract yet. And we've fought them. We've had unfair labor charges. We've been able to collect back money on the wage and hours. We established them under the unemployment. Christ, we whipped them every line, but we haven't got a contract for those people yet. See, because we don't have the economic and the dough to go down and really carry on a fight. That's a tremendous story you can give them.
Well, that's a story in itself. I mean,
that's the stuff that you should get that in as much of it in the documentary evidence as you can, because that's a story that's, you know, it's equal to the Kohler strike. They run over our pickets. They've had two or three of them died with heart attacks that were members of the firm when we started. It's a goddamn case here, huh?
George, he's still down there. He'd be the one that could get an interview.
Well, we get an interview with this kid down there.
There's only two of them left out of the 47.
47.
And they're holding on just because they could all get better jobs. They've all been promised jobs. They've all been trying to be bought off. Like George Berrius was told that, by the Mr. Hayes, the vice president, that he was too smart a kid to be working there at that company, that he would. He had a friend in Miss Eugene Cassidy, so he could have a better job, and why didn't he take it?
Oh, you couldn't. Was there anything else that you want to tell us?
No, I think that pretty much takes care of it.
Yeah, I want something from you guys. I want a rerun of this tape.
Oh, copy of it?
Yeah.
Sure.
I'll make up more records. And I'll pay you for it, whatever.
Well, you can't. You got your machine in there. Why don't you cut it? You got a tape?
Yeah, I got a tape.
Save him all that trouble.
Okay, well, if you're doing that,
well, boys, if I can help you.
Here's this one to Duarte from San Juan. This is the one you want to Duarte from the mock.
Yeah, now here's when the Teamsters first started. This was a telegram that they sent to Duarte. How much stronger do you want it than that? Now, did you get the letters that I wrote, Brown?
Yes. No, I'm missing.
I guess you can stop it.
I'm missing one letter.